The thing that I learned is hiding takes a lot of effort and energy. And keeping your story straight and making sure you don't slip up, that drains you. And so it prevented me from really having my strengths come through. I think that was probably my biggest lesson. So once I started not having to spend so much of my energy keeping my story accurate and presenting myself in a way that I thought other people wanted me to be, and instead that could just be more natural, more of my energy started going into the strengths of who I was. And I saw that come through as that's when my career started taking off, because I started approaching things as me versus approaching things as what I anticipated someone wanting me to do in that situation.
I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to this 50 Faces Focus series, in which we are celebrating LGBTQ plus professionals in a special series for Pride Month 2023. I'm joined today by Drew Holmquist, who is Principal and Head of Client Facing and Wealth Management Consulting Practices at Cutter Associates. Now based in San Diego, Drew is also the founder of Out in Finance, an industry affiliate group for LGBTQ plus professionals in finance. Welcome, Drew. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Let's start by talking a little bit about your background, your career journey. Where did you grow up and what were your early interests?
So I grew up in Minnesota, and in my early elementary years, I grew up in rural Minnesota, a small town called Le Sueur. Their claim to fame is the Jolly Green Giant, as well as the Mayo brothers that formed the Mayo Clinic were born and raised there. And then from there, I moved to the Twin Cities, and that's where I lived pretty much most of my life until well into my career stage of life. Early aspirations, like every young child, they always dream of the well media splashed careers. So I wanted to be a pilot when I was young. But actually, when I got into college, psychology and communications were really my passion.
It's so interesting. I've always thought of Minnesota as being one of those states where it must be a dream to grow up in, although I presume some cold winters, but lots of lake time, I presume, in your childhood.
We were one of the only families that did not have a cabin on the lake. It seemed like everyone else did around me, though.
How funny. So psychology, behavior, clearly an early interest there. How did your career journey take shape then?
Yeah. One of my things I always tell people is if you don't take control of your career, it will take control of you. And although I loved psychology in college, and I wanted to go on to be a therapist, I did get married in college and right before my senior year. And we had a baby a year and 8 days after we were married. So grad school was not in the cards for me. And so what else do you do with a BA in psychology but go into business? And when I was looking at what industry to go in, I felt like I wanted to go into healthcare or insurance, because everyone needs healthcare and someone needs to pay for it. So that was kind of my mindset of getting into that area. And I started really actually within the investment division of an insurance company. And from there, I started working with licensing registered representatives to sell the products of the investment insurance company, moved around operations, and then ended into kind of the front office area. I was actually a trader for a while on the trade desk. And I really enjoyed working on projects versus really the mundane day-to-day items. And so I moved into technology after that part of my career. And then from there, I worked in the asset and wealth management industry really my whole career. And about 4 years ago, I left from being in the corporate world and on that side of the desk and moved into the consulting side of the desk. And I've been in consulting for the asset and wealth management industry for the last 4 years.
Well, clearly you're always ahead of the curve, even when it comes to family and college. And also I think spotting the link between psychology and business, because I'd say that's only really having its moment in the last few years, but it certainly has always been a factor, but I don't think it's been recognized perhaps as such.
Yeah. And now they have organizational psych degrees, but when I was a psych major, no one went into business. I just felt like you could learn business on the job, but it's really hard to learn how to interact with humanity.
Absolutely. So you're the founder of Out in Finance. Can you tell us a little bit about your own Out in Finance story?
Sure. Coming out, it was a very slow process for me. I was raised in a very conservative Christian environment. And so I grew up with a belief system that I was not living, and being gay was not how God created me. That was driven into my belief system very early. And so obviously I got married to a woman. I had a couple children, and I was really struggling with my experience and my belief system. And so that ended in divorce, as you can imagine. So I needed to come out in my personal life because of what was happening, and it really wreaked havoc in our church at the time. But I did not come out at work. I was at a company that knew me and my family and knew me as straight and married. And I didn't know how to reconcile that. And so often I would just hide. People would talk about what they did on the weekends, and I would just casually say, had a couple drinks with some friends. But I never really talked about where I would go and have those drinks, for instance. Then I ended up switching companies after I was divorced, and this was probably in my early 40s. And I realized that this is my time to start afresh and to be more authentic and open. And there was nothing that I was trying to save or have to come out. I could just be real. And so it started very slowly by me just talking about what I did that weekend and the bars that I go and hang out at or the concerts I went to. And so I got more comfortable as I saw my colleagues accept me for just who I was. I never really got backlash at any company that I worked with. And I think that just kind of fueled me to become more and more real. After that, I started to really seek out employee resource groups, as well as LGBTQ organizations that I could get involved in, that I could grow, and that I could be more vocal in, simply because the financial services industry is not known as an industry that is very welcoming to the LGBTQ community. It tends to be a very white male dominant industry that is cisgendered versus LGBTQ.
Very interesting. Can you just give us a sense as to what city this was in? Because sometimes you mentioned the industry can be have a kind of a DNA that maybe is or more or less, but equally so can cities. So maybe a time as well. What kind of time frame was this?
This was in the early 2000s that I switched companies and I started coming out at work. And this was in the Twin Cities of Minnesota. So Minnesota is a pretty democratic state. We have a saying there, the Minnesota nice, and that's what it is. Everyone's very pleasant to you on the surface. They may talk about you behind your back, but in front of you and with you, people are very accepting and very warm and welcoming. Obviously, not everyone that lives there is that way, but I was pretty accepted being in that community.
And the reason I ask about time frame is because I think this time probably coincides with riding the wave of more openness, more inclusivity. Certainly the turn of the century there, we were seeing a lot of changes in work. And can you paint a picture of today, what it's like to be out in finance, and maybe why you sought to set up this affinity group that we're talking about now?
Yeah. So I always lived in Minnesota up until that point, and I've always wanted to try living somewhere else. And so I finally just moved myself to Chicago. My company was headquartered there and they allowed me to transfer locations. So I moved there. And in that process, we're now in like the 2015-ish timeframe. our company started employee resource groups, and they asked me if I would be willing to start an LGBTQ employee resource group in the Chicago office. Of course, I said yes. And as I was doing that, I wanted to get perspectives from other employee resource group leaders in the industry in the Chicago area. Kind of going back to the question you had asked earlier on, give us some context of when you came out, what was the time frame, but also what city? Well, that same mindset I had at that time was the needs for employees living in Chicago are going to be very different than the employees that maybe are in Charlotte, North Carolina, or in Texas, for instance. And so I wanted to see what worked well and what didn't work well in other organizations so I could repeat that. Well, as I started doing that, I realized everyone was in this journey together. Everyone was at different phases, but everyone was really struggling with not very many people being openly out in their firms in Chicago. And as we started talking, pretty soon, within a couple months, we had about 30 people sitting around a table on a monthly basis, just talking about how we could make an impact at our own firms, but also how we could maybe make an impact in the industry, let alone this started to become a network. So even though people were feeling like they were the only LGBTQ individual at their firm, they knew they weren't the only one in the industry in the city. And so it started providing kind of that strength in numbers for all of us.
It's really interesting that you mentioned strength in numbers, because I think also role models are so important, and also out LGBTQ role models who are succeeding, getting to the highest level. And even just in the past few months, we've seen Zach Buchwald at Russell and also Robin Grew now at Man Group just announced as CEO last week. But Robin's been a guest on this podcast. Zach, hopefully a future guest. But this is huge. I mean, in terms of just, you know, in the space of such a short time to see leaders at the absolute pinnacle that are out and open about it. I mean, this role model factor must mean something to the community, I would think.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's great to start seeing people being authentic publicly, and that level of how public you are, it really kind of depends on who you are and what your role is in society. But I always say everyone has a coming out story. It just may not be about sexuality. It's about that piece of you that you're hiding from everyone else. And when you start embracing that and you start sharing that and showing that, I mean, obviously you get to control how much of that or what that story is around that piece, but that's the coming out story. And then that's when you start really gaining the power of who you are as a person.
It's really interesting. I'll have to reflect on that, because I've heard that certainly relating to neurodiversity around the coming out story, about how those of us who don't have more obvious, I suppose, underrepresentation characteristics, how we have that. What have you found now that this is such a success now, running out in finance and it's growing and it's spreading nationally? What have you found makes the most impact, or are among the activities that you do that get a good response and you think really make a difference?
Yeah. Not surprisingly, I think any event that we do that has an in-person networking component to it tends to be the most attended. I think COVID really, it's changed our society. And it'll be very interesting when we look back in 10 years and see how society has shifted. But there's a real need to be able to connect with people that are like you. And we have found that those are really helpful, but if it's only a social aspect, they start dying off as well. So there has to be something that is interesting, that is valuable, that is helpful, and really moves you down the line. We do panel events. So sometimes we'll talk about coming out in the workplace, for instance, similar to what you're doing here on your podcast. We may have a panel of people to talk about their story, because when we tell stories, I think that's how we relate to each other. When you hear someone speak, you can go, oh, there's that piece that's similar to mine. Maybe if they came out and they had a positive experience, maybe it would be positive for me as well if I started being a little more authentic at work.
And in the course of some of the sharing, how many of your members maybe would share negative experiences, or are they getting increasingly fewer, hopefully in professional settings?
We don't really take a pulse on that at our events. In my conversations with people, the negative experiences tend to be more in your personal life. Maybe it's family rejection or friend rejection. And we hold that and we take that into the workplace. And we assume because that happened in our personal life, it's going to happen in our work life. Now, I do know some people who have felt excluded in their professional life. I have some good friends that we were in the same company. I was in one role and in the IT tech area and was very included and accepted. He was in a marketing sales area, and he was just never invited to the happy hours and never felt like he really was accepted by his colleagues deeper than just at face value. So people can have different experiences in the same company.
That's really interesting. And you work with corporate sponsors. So what's, if you were to take the pulse of them, say, for example, of corporates who want to become your partners, it does seem to me that this is going one direction only. It's not like some other diversity initiatives that are kind of flash in the pan and maybe don't get a lot more energy or oxygen later. How have you found that the corporate attitude?
I am so pleasantly surprised by the corporate partners that are signing up and saying, we want to be a part of Out in Finance. How can we be a part of it? I think there is a real drive for companies to, one, I do think there is this drive on checking a box, but companies are made up of people. And I feel like there are a lot of people now in the corporate world, especially in jobs that are responsible for any diversity, equity, or inclusion type of involvement. And they really, truly want to change the culture of their company. And they are looking for, how do I do that beyond making my policies inclusive? A policy only goes so far. I mean, you definitely need to start there. If you don't offer benefits for partners, that's a good place to start. But once you kind of have your policies there, like my experience versus my friends that I just explained, how do you change your culture so my friend would feel welcomed in that? And that's why a lot of corporations are trying to become more, and that's why we call it a partnership versus just writing us a check. We want you to be involved. We want to have events with you and other corporations to be able to share best practices. What are some things that we can do in our organization that create an equal opportunity to be successful regardless of who you are? And how can we make people feel like not only are they invited to the table, but they're actually heard and that we give them value for what they're contributing to the organization?
And it's true that visibility is not a word you mentioned before. I think having these events is so important just to have them, not just during the month of June, but equally yeah. all year round. And I think maintain that visibility so that people feel seen. And that's why I asked about some of the sharing the negative experiences, because sometimes you do need a script, maybe sometimes to help you, especially if you're young in your career. Maggie Lauer, who was on this podcast on an earlier version, she spoke about the importance of humor sometimes in those, in coping with some of those awkward moments and how that can diffuse awkwardness and allow people to just move on. So I think that this can be really useful. Well, we'll put lots of links to everything that Out in Finance does, including your events, in our show notes to this podcast so people can look there. Now, I'd just like to move to some personal reflections. So we're speaking about some negative experiences and any setbacks. Were there any that you experienced over the course of your career that you learned lessons from that you can share?
Yeah, I think the thing that I learned is hiding takes a lot of effort and energy. And keeping your story straight and making sure you don't slip up, that drains you. And so it prevented me from really having my strengths come through. I think that was probably my biggest lesson. So once I started not having to spend so much of my energy keeping my story accurate and presenting myself in a way that I thought other people wanted me to be. And instead, that could just be more natural. More of my energy started going into the strengths of who I was. And I saw that come through as that's when my career started taking off, because I started approaching things as me versus approaching things as what I anticipated someone wanting me to do in that situation. And then that got really confusing. Just imagine a spider web of all the different possibilities that could be there and how much work that would be to manage.
It reminds me of that phrase about the advantage of telling the truth is never having to remember what you said.
So exactly. I think, yeah.
So when you're truly, you don't have to worry where you're going to trip yourself up. We've spoken about mentors here, and were there any key people, either mentors or just key people in your life that you could share in terms of making an impression on you?
Yeah, three people really come to mind that were catalysts for me. One of the individuals, her name was Vicky, and she was a colleague of mine. I had just moved into this role. She was a peer. I was supervising technology. She was supervising an operations team. And she actually took an open position on my team. And I was really taken back by how she chose to leave a leadership position to take a role underneath a peer. But she was probably the first person I came out to at work. And she cried. I remember her being in my office and she cried and she goes, I have been waiting so long for me to hear these words come out of your mouth. And I think that's what really helped me feel like my experience at work is not necessarily going to be the experience of rejection that I received in my personal life. Another key player or mentor in my life was a boss I had. Her name was Pat, and she was probably the best boss I ever had. She was kind. She knew how to mentor and how to give you responsibility and not micromanage. So she really taught me how to be a good manager and supervisor, where up until that point, a lot of people get promoted. They're really good in the job they do and they get promoted into management, but they really don't know how to manage people. They're so used to doing all the detailed tasks that they almost suffocate. And so just her giving me that kind of mentoring and that space to teach me was almost parenting-like. And that also helped me figure out, how do I give back to others? And so as my coming out story, like, how do I merge my work life and my personal life and my coming out story together? She's always been that person that I always look to, kind of like, what would Pat do in this situation type thing?
That's really beautiful. Both of those stories really have family-like characteristics in terms of how that person treated you. And it's remarkable to get that. Was there a third name as well?
Yeah, there was a third one too. And the third one was a boss that I had recently, and his name was Bob. And this happened to be at the firm that I had started the employee resource group. And I was able to convince our company to get a table at the human rights campaign in Chicago. And he came to the table. I was able to hand out the tickets to a bunch of people, and I invited him and his wife. And I remember we were out in like the cocktail hour beforehand, and I said hi to him. And we had our differences at work, but he came up to me and he goes, Drew, this is who you're meant to be. Like, I see you shining here and what you have done with, at that time I was volunteering with the human rights campaign and was really on the corporate committee to help get corporations connected with HRC. And the encouragement of him working with me in the business world, but then seeing now being invited to an event and an organization that I'm involved in, and just to see how people were interacting with me and the work that I was doing there. And he was the one that just really encouraged me that this is a passion of mine and that I can't let this just go by the wayside. I need to pursue this as well because it's innate in me.
Well, my last question is around any advice you would have for your younger self now, or even any creed or motto that you live by now.
Yeah, I tend to think in book titles simply because I don't like to read, and a book title is shorter than a whole book. But the latest one is, everyone is a puzzle piece. And so it really gets to my advice, if I could give it to my younger self, would be to be you and choose to see the humanity in others. When you think about putting together a puzzle, there are two ways of putting that together that I've observed. One is you're looking for a piece to fit in this particular place in your puzzle. And you're looking at all the pieces out there and you find one that you think is there and you kind of put it there and you go, like, it looks like it goes there, and you push it down and pretty soon it pops up or nothing else fits around it. The other way to put together a puzzle is you look at all the pieces and you kind of start grouping them and you're like, oh, these are blue, they're probably in the sky. These are green, they're probably there. And then you're working in the sky and you're going, oh, this is a different shade of blue. I wonder, this must be in the lake area. And it hit me that that second way of putting together a puzzle is, one, more relaxed. Two, it's more efficient. And I realized if that is how I start relating to people, and I choose to start looking at every individual at the humanity of who they are, we're all human. We were all born the exact same. We wanted to be clothed. We wanted to be fed. We wanted to be loved. I met you now at this point in your life, and you're a product of what your story has been since birth until now. And I'm meeting that product. And so if I meet someone that rejects me or that is mean to me or that ridicules me, there's a reason for that behavior. At the core of them, though, is the humanity just like me. And so now as an adult, and now that I've lived through things, I start to see that. And I realize that that person's a puzzle. That their story, I get to choose where they fit into my puzzle. I don't have to try to change their story for them to be the piece that I need them to be in my puzzle. Instead, I can look at them. I can know who they are today. I can choose to see them in their humanity and what we have in common. But then I can choose, where do they fit in my puzzle?
Well, that's wonderful, because Laura LaTourette, who also featured in this series, speaks about this mosaic that we're creating. We're not trying to have everything blend in. It's important to have everything stand out. Well, Drew, thank you so much. I initially, when I heard your story about your mentors, I thought, well, how lucky is this person to have had three people that took such a personal family-like interest in you and your success and your passion? And then I realized there probably is no surprise, because you live celebrating a beautiful authenticity, not only in yourself, but in others. And the work you're doing at Out in Finance is, to me, looks like a celebration. I've never attended any of your events, but I will. And I think it will be great to celebrate with you. And there's a great joy that emanates from that and everything you do. So thank you so much for coming here and sharing your insights with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to our 50 Faces Focus series. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear from more inspiring professionals and their stories, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.